Welcome back, Rangers, to another episode of Power Gamers Podcast. This is the Red Power Gamer, Mike.
And this is the Black Power Gamer, Rami. Welcome you all to our fifth episode.
Man, it's our number five.
All right, man. We're just cranking these out.
By the way, we're live on iTunes now.
We are live on iTunes, man. The legitimacy.
The website's up. I need to do a little more work to it, but it's taking shape.
Yep, for sure, man. Let us know your feedback, guys, but definitely check us out on iTunes now.
And that sound means it is Alpha 5's A-list for the week.
That's right. And to kick us off here, we're going to talk a little bit about Steam Greenlight. So the concept behind Steam Greenlight is basically that you have indie developers and they're able to put their games up, you know, just like have them available. And, you know, users are able to vote them, you know, like, you know, if they prefer them, then they're going to give them an upvote. If not, they dislike them, they're going to give them a downvote, what have you. And based on that, you know, it's kind of Valve's way of sifting through new titles to see what are people interested in and what should be available on Steam.
So these games, I'm not as familiar with it. These games, are they games that are being developed by Valve, or are they developed by any developer?
Indie developers.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Largely. So, like, to give an example... Okay, you have games like Underworld,
okay,
Cannon Zone, The Last Shore. This is just off the homepage right here. Some recent submissions. So basically, the idea being is that the user is going to help pick new games for Steam.
Okay,
you know, to be massively, you know, accessible in mass. So the idea is to browse through the entries, see what they like, and based on the user's feedback, you know, Valve is going to choose what games should be added to Steam.
Okay.
Now, unfortunately, you know, there's a slip up here. It's not Valve's fault. You have some developers trying to use underhanded tactics to basically get their games on that, you know, available on Steam.
Oh, okay, they're abusing the system then.
Exactly. So what they're doing is trying to have developers will like promise free copies of their games in exchange for thumbs up votes, you know, on the titles.
Okay.
So, you know, then obviously there's going to be, you know, it's not viable, you know. And
right.
So Valve isn't you know, a big fan of people gaming their system. Like, they don't want people to take advantage of this. And so they're trying to find a way to curb this problem. This is a statement that they've made regarding this issue. When you give away copies of your game in exchange for votes, you put us in a really uncomfortable position. We do not think these votes accurately reflect customer interest, and it makes our job harder in deciding which games customers would actually buy and play on Steam. The quote continues, additionally, when you give away copies of your game for votes, then every other developer on Greenlight thinks that is now the thing they need to do in order to get noticed. We don't think that is healthy for the system or really what customers want. That's the end of the quote. That really covers everything in terms of, you know, I think the quote is really on point.
Right, right. I guess the thing that I'm a little fuzzy on is that, are these ideas for games that people are voting on, or are they actual games? Because couldn't any indie developer who's developed a game go to Steam and say, hey, I want to put this on Steam, and then not have to deal with the whole voting process?
Right.
Or is this just for people who are like, hey, I've got this idea for this game, what do you think?
Exactly.
Okay.
This is like concepts for games,
right,
that are being you know, suggested for Steam, and say like, hey, what would you like to see?
Okay.
So the idea being that, okay, there's enough interest. Like, people are saying, we like the idea for this game. We would buy it if it was available on Steam.
I've got you. Okay.
And so then the idea is that those people who go and upvote these ideas, mm-hmm, whether they like it or not, are promised free copies of the game upon its completion.
Yeah, that's a little shady.
This is very shady, super sketch. I mean, the gaming industry is not the mafia or anything. Like, I mean, come on, guys, you know. So this is, you know, the main, I think the a huge issue, though, too, is that other developers are going to be, you know, their hand is almost forced to be able to compete because it's not a level playing field.
Right. Slippery slope.
Very slippery slope. You know, we don't want this to become widespread among developers. And so, you know, Valve is working, you know, to address this issue and, you know, curb the you know, address the problem.
It sounds like a similar issue they had with the Steam Early Access, to where developers would say, hey, get in early for the game, pay less for it, pay 10, 15, whatever now. The problem was is that I believe, I remember correctly, some developers would, I mean, stop working on the game.
Yes.
It would never finish it, would change it. I remember I bought Rust in Early Access, which, I mean, I haven't played since I played it one time, I think. And it was okay, but I remember a few months after I bought it, they came back and said, hey, we're scrapping it and developing a whole new game. I'm like, well, okay, I didn't really play it anyway, but I could see somebody who was really looking forward to that and already paid for it being like, wait, what?
Mm-hmm.
Why are y'all doing that now?
Yep.
So I can see that.
Yeah, it's an issue. It's definitely something that Valve needs to adjust to kind of curb this issue, but we'll have to wait and see. I mean, the concept on paper is fine, but you know, it's just a matter of, you know, trying to address those points at which people are taking advantage of the system and rendering it unusable, or you know, not in the gamer's best interest, which is what Valve wants to avoid. They want to do what's in the gamer's best interest.
So what do you think would be a good way, or how do you think they could go about that?
That's a good point. It's very difficult. I haven't really thought about it, but I think a first step could be to identify very clear instances of companies that have done this, and make an example of them. You know, like let's say a company, you know, it's like clearly like they've posted, you know, something somewhere where they're saying like
they'd have to have terms and conditions or something saying.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. They have to have some very, very explicit, you know, evidence that would indicate, okay, what companies have done this in the past? Guess what? You can never have your game on Steam.
Right, right.
Period. Okay. You know, just have a very firm line, draw a very firm line about those companies that have been proven to do this.
Right.
And, you know, if such evidence comes forward for other companies that have done this, they know what the consequence is.
Right, right, right.
And they're not going to want to risk that. So it's just like, hey, if you're ending up, you know, if we see you doing this, if we catch you doing this, guess what? Your game's never going to be on Steam.
Yeah.
Okay. Good luck out there on your own. I think that's one way to do it, and you know, a possible first step.
Yeah, I think that's about the only way they can really handle it. And I mean, let's be honest, at this point, they're not really hurting for money, so they'll figure something out.
Oh yeah, you know, Valve will come up with something.
Okay, moving on. Next on the list, and this is something I saw here recently. Apparently, PlayStation will now allow you to upgrade your sub account to a full. Or a full regular account, which I didn't know a whole lot about this because I believe when I first made my, I'm trying to think, I was 18 or 19 when I got my PS3 and made the PlayStation account. And this is really sub accounts are for minors who are under 18.
Oh, is that what it is?
They make the account and it limits them to, I think they can only have a certain amount of. You can have like certain limits on the account, how much you can spend at the store, how many hours in the gameplay you have a week, stuff like that.
Okay.
The issue with this is, or like I think even like the chat channels you can go into, like you can only be in like the kid-friendly stuff.
I see.
Okay. And the issue being is that, say if someone, I mean, it got in PlayStation 3 when they were 13 or 14, were only allowed to make that sub-account, that minor account.
Right.
And now they're, you know, in their 20s and they're like, well, I've got all these achievements and all these unlocks
and
all
no
these
way.
downloaded games.
Right.
And the only way to get around it is to create a new account. I'm like, who wants to do that?
That's lame. Yeah. I didn't realize that was, cause I mean, I didn't own a PS3 and I don't have a PS4 yet, at least. That's definitely an issue. I mean, it's good that they, have come up with a solution for this.
Right. Right. I mean, that's one of those things where it's like, man, that's about time.
Right.
And there's actually, the second part of that is allowing us to change our PSN names, but I'll cover that in later in the episode.
Okay, so for our next item, Bethesda has confirmed it's going to host its first ever E3 conference in LA on June 14th. So the details for the time being are fairly slim. You know, we'll see. You know, there's just like a lot of speculation up to this point.
So when you say they're going to host their first E3 conference, they've never done anything like that at E3 before?
They have not done a formal conference.
Wow. Okay.
Like a formal conference. Obviously, with, you know, their games have been announced maybe like in the context of a Microsoft
right,
or
right.
Sony conference, right? You know, or another, you know, but them as a developer, mm-hmm. they have not had their own independent conference. So this is big news. This is very nice for Bethesda fans, myself included, Mike included.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And, you know, what a lot of people expect is Fallout 4.
Okay.
I really need to play the Fallout 3 expansions. That game is great. Mike, what do you think about Fallout 3?
I played a bunch of it back in the day. This was when, man, I was freshman, sophomore year of college.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working at Blockbuster, so... I mean, I got all the free games I could want, rentals anyway, and I played a bunch of it. I got right to the end of the game and never quite finished it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know if I ever played any of the expansions, but man, I had a lot of fun with that.
Fallout 3 is... I think when I played that, I felt like, man, this is... It was one of those hallmarks of gaming for me.
For me, it was kind of like Skyrim before Skyrim.
Yes, I would agree with that. It was just an awesome experience in every way. I love the mechanics, and it was... It delivered on every front.
Right, right. And speaking of Skyrim, Elder Scrolls, do you know when are they? They're obviously working on the next one, but
that's what people would think. You know, we'll see. I personally don't think that there's going to be an announcement for new Elder Scrolls
right.
at this, because it's just Elder Scrolls Online just released not right. long ago, and you know they're still doing stuff with that.
Well, that was,
and people are still playing Skyrim. You know,
that was ZeniMax. But yeah, you're right. Skyrim's, when did that come out?
Skyrim 11? Was 2011.
Because it was 11, yes. 11, 11.
Yes.
That's how I remember it.
Yeah, 2011. So it doesn't even feel like that.
But you know, those games are huge.
Right.
And that takes years to develop. You're right. I mean, it's probably going to be another year or two, I think, before we see anything there.
That's what I would think. They're surely, you know, maybe like working on working on the next iteration at a very early stage, but I don't think they're going to announce anything Elder Scrolls related.
Right, right.
But yeah, I mean, that's what I have to say about that news. You know, it's exciting. We'll just have to wait to see what they have in store for us.
The next one we've got on the list is something I saw actually here on IGN just actually earlier today. Nintendo President Satoru Iwata teases Mii smartphone app. Which we've heard a few things about here, going back a while, that Nintendo says they don't want to put any of their games or any of their software on mobile or iOS devices, but they're looking for ways to integrate those platforms with their brand, with their media. And so what it kind of seems like, according to this article, is that they're going to have a way for you to integrate your Miis with somehow with your mobile devices, whether it's your avatar or not 100%... clear on that, but okay, that's a step, I guess, baby step.
Yeah, I think it's you know, we'll see how the final product is.
Right.
Personally, I think there's, even when it comes to like the Miiverse on Wii U, there is integration, but it's not even that much integration, because it's like, for example, on Smash Brothers, you'll see that, you know, you'll see the player's Mii avatar
mm-hmm.
When you're playing, right? Like, it'll be next to their username.
But you don't really communicate with
them. But you're not, exactly, you're not communicating. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, we'll see.
Right. It's, I think it's a step. But yeah, it's one of those things where I'm not quite sure I see the end goal or the point of it.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from expanding their brand awareness, because I guess the angle you could take it is that so many kids these days, when we were growing up, our first, I guess, experience or introduction to these electronics, a lot of them were video games or Game Boys.
That's,
I
mean, true.
Those were handheld electronics of our day.
Right, but then like everybody's getting introduced via cell phone.
I mean, you see nowadays. Their kids playing with, I mean, their parents get their hand-me-down iPhones, Android phones.
Yeah, man.
So
my,
I guess...
My niece has, my God, she had her own, I don't know if she has her own iPhone, but it was uh-huh. like, she would be playing with her dad's iPhone, and she like, right. you know, like 4 years old, right? And she like puts all of the apps into one group, and it's like her dad didn't know how to, you know, undo that, and
right.
he's like, fix this, and she puts them back in the original spot. You know, it's like those types of things. So I think from that perspective, it makes sense,
right?
Just to, you know, for brand awareness and kind of testing the waters. So, you know, it has potential. you know, we'll see what the, you know, like the end goal is.
Right, right.
I don't even think really Nintendo knows what the end goal is other than just awareness.
That's kind of the viewpoint I'm getting. What I would really like to see them do is integrate their store more, because right now it's kind of disjointed. Like I bought A Link to the Past on the Wii Virtual Console, but that does not carry over to the Wii U Virtual Console.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those things where it's like, I mean, if you already own it, I don't have to keep buying the same game over and over and over again.
No, of course.
But I'd like to see, even, heck, think of how many people play old Nintendo games, SNES games, NES games on emulators that they can run on their Android and mm-hmm. jailbroken iOS devices. If Nintendo would just like, hey, I mean, they wouldn't have to do much in the coding division because it's already out there.
No, you know what? Speaking of that, we didn't plan to talk about this, but there's, you know, on Cool ROMs, which many people are familiar with, there's actually, I didn't say we were, but many people are familiar with it. Cool ROMs actually does not have any of the Nintendo ISOs. You know, okay. Any of the game ISOs are not present on Cool ROMs from any Nintendo console, Game Boy Advance, you know, GameCube, anything.
So they went back and took them all out.
So they took them all down. Obviously, they're available through other ways, but the idea was that there was an article maybe a month or so ago or more regarding Nintendo kind of branching out to offer their mm-hmm. classic games in like airline entertainment.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
I think that's good. You know, branch it out, you know, like have something like that available, you know, rather than those kind of like, you know, for international flights where they have the option available for that.
Right.
So we'll see how that goes. That was an older story, but, it's definitely related to this. So I thought I'd bring it up.
Brain flash. I just had a money making idea for Nintendo.
All right.
I know that Iwata said, or he's mentioned in the past that he, does not want to, he wants to stick with Nintendo hardware. He doesn't want to carry over Nintendo games to the mobile market.
Mm-hmm.
But what if you could combine the two? What if they just carried over older generation games, NES, SNES, maybe N64? I mean, these devices are already capable of running these older games.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't cost Nintendo anything to develop hardware there. But what they could do is develop a Bluetooth controller that you could link to tablets, iPhones, Android phones, and have their first-party controller that's Bluetooth connected to any mobile device.
Yeah, man, that would be... I'd buy that.
That's where they get their hardware, they get into the mobile market, mm-hmm. and then have just like an app store where you could play the old Nintendo games. You still have to buy them through Nintendo.
Right.
You could even if they wanted to do store them, you could have some type of storage on the Bluetooth controller, like mm-hmm. a proprietary Nintendo Bluetooth controller.
Mm-hmm.
Store the games on there, licenses on there. That'd be cheap to produce.
That would definitely make money. Unquestionably,
we need to patent that.
Yeah.
Nintendo, if you use this,
right? No, but that's a really good idea, and you know, we'll see if the idea of it extending to airline like in flight entertainment mm-hmm. extends to like you know mobile apps, even though originally that wasn't the plan,
right?
You know, just kind of have like an eShop variant for both Android and iPhones,
right?
You know
right.
what I mean? I mean that seems like it would. That seems like it would definitely make money, and again, it's not a cost, you know, like a huge cost. It's just putting it out there, basically.
Right, right. Okay, let's see. Next on the list, we have Sonic Boom, which I haven't played. I saw a video you sent me, but first of all, let me just ask: who's still playing Sonic games?
I don't know.
I haven't played one since Sonic 2 on the Sega Genesis.
No,
Dreamcast. I played the Dreamcast one.
Oh, Sonic Adventure! Oh, I love Sonic Adventure 2 Battle on GameCube.
Okay,
where they added a multiplayer functionality.
You're just strange then.
Nah, no, that was one of the classics I think for the GameCube. We got it at launch.
Okay,
So I think that was really good for a 3D Sonic. I still prefer the 2D ones, like Sonic 3 and Sonic CD. I mentioned in a previous episode are some of my favorites.
Oh, did you ever play Sonic 3D Blast? I believe was the game.
3D Blast.
I've got it.
If I'm not, that was for Saturn?
No, it was Genesis.
I have not played it.
It was the first Sonic 3D game that was kind of an over-the-head third-person type of almost isometric.
I remember it being like a bust. yeah, from a critical point of view.
Yeah, it wasn't. I mean, it was strange. I mean, it was great to have a 3D game, and at the time, it kind of worked, but it was kind of. I mean, it wasn't really 3D. It was one of the Sega Genesis.
Sure.
But I mean, it was fun for me being 10 years old. But,
oh yeah.
Sonic Boom here. I just saw this on IGN because I like the site, but apparently Sonic Generations sold 1,850,000 copies in 2012. That's a crap ton.
Yeah,
no wonder they keep making these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean almost 2 million there. It's a lot for one title.
And then Sonic Boom: Rise of Lyric sold 490,000 copies.
Frankly, I don't know how it sold one copy because, you know, that game is awful on every conceivable level. Graphics. I mean, what? We watched the... I showed you that cinematic.
Right.
That was released, you know, put out like 2 or 3 days before the game's launch. And it's just... It's broken on so many levels. It's, you know... It's like Sega wants to take Sonic and just put him out to pasture. Like, just kill... They just want to shoot him again and again. It's like that clip from The Simpsons where Nelson's crying and it's like he's already dead. And he's... Or the kid, not Nelson. It's like some other kid.
Right.
Why, you little... I got you!
Stop! He's already dead!
You know... It's like, all right, here's a game, Sonic Generations. It's a critical success. Fans like it. And a commercial success.
Right.
Why not just do more of the same?
Take a page out of the Call of Duty book? Or
yeah, whatever. I mean, just like just redo that. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You know, add to it, whatever. But, you know, keep the same formula. It's working. So why? I don't know, man. They're like killing Sonic over and over and over.
I think that, yeah, Sonic is definitely one of those series that could probably benefit from having fewer games just releasing every 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, not even that. Even if it was every 2 or 3 years,
mm-hmm.
it'd be fine. You know, as long as they're not, you know, they can't be, you know, this Sonic Boom quality game. I mean, everybody who's familiar with that game knows it's horrendous.
Yeah, I'm actually looking on IGN right now. It got a 4.3 out of 10. Man.
That's generous for the game, I think. You know, genuine Sonic fans, you know that game is, you know what it is. So, yeah.
Here's what I would like to see. I would like to see Sega make a comeback and do another console.
God, I would love that, actually. Didn't they have the best console names? You guys know. Come on, Genesis, Saturn, Dreamcast. I have a Dreamcast, right?
Yep.
So... it would be really nice. I don't think it's feasible, but it's like a nice dream,
right?
To be thinking, right. You know, a nice fantasy. Let me say.
I mean, they had a bunch of great games on Dream. One of these episodes, we're just gonna have to cover the Dreamcast.
That would be great as a retro, yeah.
And just go back and hit all that because there is actually a lot of interesting story behind the Dreamcast. And I'll just say this real quick: the Dreamcast was actually the precursor to the original Xbox.
Wow.
The operating system was based off Windows NT.
Okay.
And Microsoft developed this operating system for it.
Dude.
And
there's a lot to say about that.
Microsoft came in, then it kind of bombed, and they're like, oh, well, we're just going to do our own thing. And the original Xbox came out.
Dude, you know what that sounds like? That sounds like when
Sony was going to do the disc player.
Exactly. The disc, like the PSX add-on for the SNES.
That's right. That's
what they were originally going to do. And there was some, you know, issue, and they separated, and Sony was like, we're going to do our own console.
Right. I think Nintendo, like, it may have been at the press conference, said, we're going with Philips.
And right.
They switched to Philips for the GameCube?
I believe so.
Or, I don't know, we'll have to look that up.
Yeah, we'll have to double check. But it seems similar to kind of that kind of split.
You know, they're just shooting themselves in the foot now.
Yeah, I mean, it's history, but I mean, I think it's made the industry more dynamic, which is, you know, it was good at that time, but
right.
the industry has changed a lot since then. The name of the game is definitely money based, right?
Right, right. And I think, you know, always having more competition is always best for the customer.
Right.
But you know, that's something I would love to see Sega kind of pull a fast one, like we're going to release some new hardware.
Remember Shenmue 2?
Oh, yeah. I actually never played that, but I heard a lot about it.
Those are classic games. The fans have been waiting, like, as much as we want a sequel to Phantom Dust, mm-hmm. and we're excited for it. We're lucky it got announced.
Right.
It got announced, so we're in the clear. But people, you know, the real hardcore Shenmue fans, shout-outs to you guys. You guys have been waiting for Shenmue 3. You know, we hope, you know, it'll come out at some point, you know. If they revived 10 years after the fact, it's possible with Shenmue 2.
Possible.
Yeah. Having a sequel to it and finishing the trilogy. And Power Stone.
Power Stone. I've got that.
One of the best.
They re-released that on PSP.
Oh, really?
And it's dope. Playable on the Vita. And I've got it on the PSP. And I've actually got both, so we can hook it up later.
I'm about to play. Yeah, we're going to play after this episode is recorded.
And
Power Stone.
What was the other one? Suikoden. Suikoden 2. Yes. 1 and 2.
Yeah.
They just re-released those on the PlayStation Network. But those are PS1 games.
Really, really great RPGs. Mm-hmm. A little nostalgia there for you guys.
Showing our age a little bit.
Yeah, so do you have anything else to say about Sonic Boom?
No, I think that about covers Alpha's 5 A-list.
All right. And that's right, Power Gamers. That sound means it's time for Rita's Rant.
This is the section where we just get to bitch about stuff.
That's right. So here's another story, and this just, like, when I saw this, I was like, first thing I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, that's just the first thing that came to my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently the public beta that was expected to happen for Halo Master Chief Collection to test the new patch is not going to be public. It's going to be internal now.
Okay.
What? What is that about? If it's not gonna be public, then what? You know, it's gonna be released anyway publicly. Like, you should at least test it with a large, you know, population. Internal testing is gonna be what? Maybe a couple hundred people? Maybe? Not even that.
I think you're being generous at that.
Yeah. So it doesn't make sense to me.
No, I agree. I don't know. Like, I, for whatever reason, I think a lack of testing is what got them really in the situation in the first place.
Yeah.
And who knows, man.
So, you know, I really just don't understand this decision at all. I think it's objectively clear why it's necessary that the beta be public. And it, you know, it just escapes me why, 343 is not, you know, going forward with having this be public. Because if it's going to be released publicly anyway, it's only in their best interest to test the patch with a larger number of people.
Right.
That's pretty clear, I think.
The only thing I can think of is that they've probably shifted development toward Halo 5. And that Master Chief Collection's been out since, was it November?
Yes.
And it's still not quite there yet.
Nope.
And only thing I can think of is they're just going full steam on Halo 5, trying to get that ready.
It's possibly the case.
But still, you're right, though. I mean, lack of testing is always kind of scary to me, mm-hmm. Because that's really how you know the game's going to work.
Right. I mean, that's just that's a kind of surefire way. Side note from gaming, Jon Stewart is apparently leaving The Daily Show.
I saw that.
This is a travesty, guys.
He's been there, what, like 17 years?
A long time. 80. This show.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see what saving grace there is for Comedy Central other than, like, South Park. But, like, I can watch South on Hulu.
Right.
You know,
right.
There's no reason for me to really watch Comedy Central otherwise.
So has he said what he's going to do or what the plans are?
That's not clear, I think, up to, you know, for the time being. But I don't know. It's just really sad. You know, the satire is great that he offered. And, mm-hmm. you know, I remember, I'll tell you, like, my very favorite segment of Jon Stewart was when he was covering Herman Cain's election,
mm-hmm.
his campaign, Herman Cain's campaign for president. And when he dropped out, Herman Cain referenced a quote from the Pokemon movie, and the segment was brilliant, you uh-huh. know, and like he mentioned. One thing especially that sticks out is, like, he mentioned, you know, Jon Stewart mentioned that they played a clip of Slow King
uh-huh.
from Pokemon movie 2000, and he was like, I could use pants. And so, like, that, you know, the whole, like, allegations with regard to Herman Cain back then. So he was like, that's right, guys. And then Jon Stewart was like, that's right, guys. the shelter of knowledge. So like there's like a shelter, you know, a shelter on you know, Slow King's head or whatever. That segment is just brilliant. So, you know, things like that I'm going to really miss. And he was, I mean, Jon Stewart is a really politically aware guy, obviously.
Yeah.
And I would say more informed than a lot of his guests.
I would agree, because he would get people on there and he would ask them the tough questions.
Oh, he wouldn't play. I mean, he would definitely go in on them. Like, he would, like, one time, now the congresswoman's name escapes me, but she showed up on the show trying to talk about Obamacare, you know, using the that name, like, for the rhetorical effect. And he was like, so the Health Care Act, and he's like, have you read it? Have you read all of it? It's like 1,000 pages, right? It's huge. He read all of it. He's like, yeah. He's like, yeah, I have. And so he's like, no, I've only skimmed it or this.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're a congressperson. You need to, you know.
If you're going to have an opinion on it, you have to at least have read it.
I've read the whole thing, right? So, you know, these type of things, like, we'll definitely miss. We'll see what role he ends up in. Maybe he's just going to do his own thing.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm curious. I was watching actually just the other night with my wife, John Oliver's show.
I love that show.
Do you? Because I don't know. I just didn't think he was as funny.
Of course not as funny. And apparently there's another show that's in place now. I didn't see it yet. It's called
because Jimmy Kimmel's got a show, and then
no, but there's like another show in the kind of vein of Colbert and Stewart.
Uh-huh.
It escapes me right now, but yeah, no. At least let me say, at least from what I've seen of John Oliver's show, I've liked it. Right. I saw the like the net neutrality segment and a couple of others, and I was like, these are brilliant segments. Mm-hmm. I haven't like watched a full episode of it, but at least from what I've seen, it's good.
Okay.
I mean, what do you think of it?
I don't know. It was okay. I mean, the writing's good. I don't know his deliverance on the jokes. It kind of seemed like he was trying so hard not to laugh at half of his own jokes.
Really? Colbert is so perfect.
I know. That. See, that was the thing. They're just stone cold.
How often? I mean, I would, for sure, you can count on your finger.
Right.
Like, or let me say, on one hand, the number of times that Colbert has even been like about to laugh, you know, a handful, right? Other times he just, no, man, he's just totally serious.
I mean, he's like, in character. Yeah.
100%. So,
and that was the one thing with John Oliver is he could, like, every time he'd make a joke, he'd kind of like, he was just a hair's breadth away from just cracking up. I'm like, all right, man, it's it's funny, but come on now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. I'd probably like it if I watch more of it though.
Yeah. But I just want to mention that it's quite a shame. Satire will be missed from both Colbert and Jon Stewart.
Okay, hitting back on a part from earlier in the show, I talked about the upgrade of the PSN account to a master account, which the two guys, Colin Moriarty and Greg Miller, are actually leaving to do their own thing. And they just had their last episode. But one thing that Colin always asks Shuhei Yoshida about is changing his our PSN names. And this is something that I'm definitely ready for. Like, I got my PlayStation 3 in 2009. And at the time, I really liked the AMD processor line. The Phenom was their new processor line. It's,
yep.
And I was like, man, that sounds like a cool name. And the only reason I picked it is because that Captain Crunch, where I used an Xbox Live, was already taken. I wish I could change my name.
Right.
But
I'm kind of surprised. I mean, like, since I'm not familiar with, you know, Sony products as much, I'm honestly surprised. I mean, you were able to change your Xbox Live gamertag since the original Xbox.
Right, right.
Although, like, at first it didn't cost money. Now it's $10, if I'm not mistaken.
And heck, I'd pay $20 or $30.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fine. You know, they make a cost out, you know, they make something out of it. It's totally good. And it's, you know, they're doing a service by changing it.
Right.
But I remember, like, what people used to do to, how is it? They would want to get their gamer tag changed for free once it started costing money.
They just get their friends to report them.
Exactly. They get their friends to report that their name is offensive. And so they're like, we received, you know, such and such report. You have to change your name. And they're like, oh man, I'm sorry. You know, and they go and change their name.
Oh no.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
So they get that for free or whatever. But that's cool that they're adding it.
Well, no, they haven't. That's the thing. You still can't on PlayStation Network. You can't change.
I thought
your
you
name.
Were not okay. So you're not. There's no news about.
No.
Wow, that's lame. Yeah, Sony,
my rant.
Sony, come on. Yeah, man, I totally forgot this is from the rant. Okay, guys, get it the fuck together.
Like it is. Like
what the heck?
I saw something here a while back where they made the. They commented on it and saying that one of the issues being that They don't want people to go in and harass other players and go and change their name.
Come on, man.
But the easy way around that is you give them like...
They should have a set... Server. Changing the name
right
should not affect, you know, whatever they've already built up.
Right.
From one name, then it's going to stay once they've changed their name.
See, from my understanding is some issues, but that kind of seems to be what I was listening to some Sony rep. This was the rep was saying that being one of the reasons that they didn't want to or couldn't change it.
Mm-hmm.
Easy way to get around that is to have an account level user ID like Steam does.
I see.
You've got your change, and then you have like your subname that you can go and change whenever you want.
See, that makes so much more sense because you have a standard. I love that about Steam because you just have like the one, you know, you can just kind of make it whatever basically,
right?
You know, just to log in,
mm-hmm.
and then in game, just like change it to whatever.
Your account name is separate from your username. Your username, I guess.
Exactly,
and that's. That's the way to do it. And
yep. I think that's a good fix.
I don't know.
Potential fix, at least, because...
They don't have the manpower or the time or the money to go in, because they'd probably have to rebuild their entire network.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. That's just kind of one of those things that's kind of like, it's 2015, guys.
Yeah, that's pretty basic. I mean, how long ago was this standard, you know?
Yeah, that's been a little bit on that one. But anyway, next on the rant list, and this one I'll just hit on briefly, because we give Nintendo a little too much crap sometimes. We still love them. I saw an article here on, this is Kotaku, I think, actually, earlier this week. Nintendo's new line of business, their three pillars being game hardware, game software, which I get both of those, but then health. See that they've been headed in that direction a while, ever since they switched over to the Wii. They've had more, one of the main selling points of the Wii is it gets you off the couch, gets you moving,
mm-hmm.
causes you to break your flat screen TV.
Yeah.
But then they had, you know, the Wii Fit, the balance board, and all the Wii Fit games, and all the little add-ons, and they're actually now talking about having some type of sleep tracker
mm-hmm.
and kind of diet plans. So I don't know, it's kind of alarming, because I hope that... And Nintendo's been around for a really long time. They haven't always done video games, but that's what's really made them famous, what's mm-hmm. made them a lot of money.
Right.
And I hope they aren't turning their backs on the video game side of the business to focus on the kind of health tech side of the business, because recently that's been a growing market.
That's true.
Everybody's doing these Fit watches, smart watches.
Oh yeah, you definitely have you can throw it on your Android
Fitbit
step tracker,
right.
Yeah, all these types of things, and those are definitely popular. I think as long as they don't spread themselves too thin with that integration, it could definitely be positive.
Right. I mean, it's definitely. I mean, I can see what they're doing. They're trying to find a new niche. I guess it's the blue water strategy. Go where there's no blood in the water.
I see.
Go where there's very little competition for them as far as how that interacts with gaming.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone else is just doing, it syncs with your phone or it syncs with your computer. Mm-hmm. There's not really much in the way of, yes, this is a health fitness tracker that helps you in your game in some way. But I hope that their gaming division doesn't suffer as a side effect of that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, the potential is there in terms of, this is a new venture and nobody else is really doing it or planning to do it, at least. But if, if they spread themselves too thin, then that could be a potential issue.
Yeah, here last year they announced they were working on a new health platform that part of it was a sleep sensor. Which is kind of cool, I guess, but mm-hmm. I don't know what they're going to do with that. It's kind of like the Amiibo. I'm like, that was a cool idea, but I kind of felt like it was tacked on at the end
mm-hmm.
just as something to sell. I don't know. It kind of... I've ran about this all day, but as a longtime Nintendo fan, I love their games, and man, sometimes it seems like they don't know what to do with them.
Yeah, we'll see how that, this pillar kind of pans out. I mean, it's... The fact that they called it a pillar
mm-hmm.
in its own right as like one third, that really kind of speaks to the fact that it's going to be essential. So
a pretty monumental part. And you can even see early traces of it back where they had the DS has the coins you get from if you carry it in your pocket.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like a pedometer type setup.
Mm-hmm.
And
I got to encourage walking around.
Right, movement.
That. Yeah, yeah.
And one of the earlier Pokemon games, it was for the DS, I forget which one it was, had the little it was like the little Pokemon attachment that had like a pedometer in it where you would like unlock stuff for your Pokemon.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you can definitely see they've been kind of slowly moving in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the end goal with it is though, because I kind of feel like it's almost a fad right now, the whole health fit tech fad.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know though. They might do something really cool with it.
Yeah, we'll see. I think it shows promise. And like you said, kind of the fact that they've kind of tested the waters with a few of these things and
right.
kind of tested their features, you know, like Wii Fit has been, I think, a huge success, and a lot of other things. So, we'll see, you know, we'll see what, as this, pillar, this health pillar kind of gets more, more structure to it as we understand a little bit more about it.
And that's one thing you can say about Nintendo. They're not afraid to try something new.
Yeah.
They will always try something. Okay. Let's see. And then the last one on the rant that I wanted to bitch about today, and this really doesn't affect me as much because I don't have to have the newest 3DS because there's always a new one. But the data transfer between 3DSs, to my understanding from what I've read and seen recently, is excruciatingly long if you try it. Say if you had a 16 or 32 gig flash drive or SD card. Yeah, SD card in your DS and you wanted to transfer over to another one on your new 3DS, the one that just released, it can take hours and hours and hours, 12, 15 hours, something like that.
Right.
Because it's transferring everything on the card. I've seen some people, though, where what they can do is just move the game saves and I think the licenses or just the game saves and then transfer the game data into their computer and then move that onto the new card and move it over like that. And it's much quicker. But that just kind of seems like it's kind of messy.
Right.
I don't know.
It doesn't seem as streamlined.
Right.
Or as, intuitive.
Right.
And as it should be.
I think it all kind of, and this is not knocking on Nintendo. The thing they've always done is they've always focused on gameplay over hardware. They've never been the fastest, never had the most powerful hardware. But they have great gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
So even look back at the Game Boy. It wasn't color, it was black and white pretty much, it was two-tone, but you look at the Sega Game Gear, which was full color, much more powerful, and failed.
Right.
Because it just didn't have, one was so much more expensive, but just didn't have the same level of great games.
That's true.
So you can look at it and say that Nintendo has a history of not always having the flashiest piece of tech out there, but they do well. They know how to price their equipment to sell it. And to make money off of it.
Right.
And I think that's probably the constraint we're seeing now with the 3DS transfers is that this tech wasn't originally probably built to handle this much data transfer.
Right.
And that as games have become in the past few years so much larger and network speeds have changed so much, that's probably where it's sagging or lagging. But they've got to be working on their next 3DS or whatever their handheld's going to be. If it's a merger between handheld and home console.
Yeah, we'll see.
I think it'll be it won't be an issue probably after this generation.
Welcome, humans. I am Zordon.
So that means Zordon is introducing us here to his watch list. So among his watch list, we hinted at it last week when we discussed the Star Wars bundle. Because I got the bundle to, read Battlefront 2.
Mm-hmm.
I've been playing it for the past couple days. Super fun. You can play it online through.
Is that built into the game now, or do you have to do anything special to get that to work?
No, you just have to. You just download Game Ranger, and it will actually show the games. When you run Battlefront, it'll show the games that are loaded, but you have like a side application basically.
Okay, that's running in the background.
It's running in the background. It'll say on the bottom, you just say like, it'll automatically detect what games you have that Game Ranger runs servers for.
Okay, okay.
And it'll say on the bottom, such and such player has started a Battlefront game.
Okay.
So it's perfect because it just has that automatic update when a person starts a game or whatever, and you can just like jump on it. I'm so glad that it's still online. Definitely people are still playing that kind of in anticipation of Battlefront 3. people have been, you know, waiting like carnivorous wolves for this for this game. I mean, people will kill for this game. I'm sure of it.
I mean, I halfway expected it never to be released.
Yes, I think a lot of people thought that for a while because originally, Free Radical had developed the game from 2006 to 2008, and it was in alpha phase, right? So it was basically done,
right?
You know, it was close to done. You know, just patch up a few things, and I want to say a couple of years ago, that alpha footage was released because like LucasArts dissolved or whatever,
right.
And so the game just wasn't released. It was then picked up. The license was picked up in 2013, and it's just been in the works by DICE since then. Okay. I think, I'm very glad it's in their hands. Actually, I just hope they don't. I don't think they will. I hope they don't half-ass it like a couple of these. More recent Battlefield. Battlefield sequels.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's just so much riding on this game that they really kind of have to deliver.
Yeah, at least for the series.
Yeah, they have to deliver, and there's just so much riding on the game. Plus, I think it's good that they haven't released a lot of information about it, you know, because they kind of want to, you know, just focus and not have many rumors, you know, spreading or what have you.
Right.
However, speaking of which, I was just looking through... and I just before we started this podcast, there was some news posted a little bit earlier today. Apparently, Battlefront is supposed to, you know, of course it's going to have campaign and multiplayer.
Mm-hmm.
The multiplayer is going to support 64, just like standard Battlefield games. That's super exciting.
That is going to be nice.
I'm probably just going to play this game when it comes out. I'm not going to really do much else.
Yeah, this is one that I'll definitely pick up. One of my favorite Battlefield games was 2142.
Oh, great game.
Which wasn't, I don't think critically was a huge success.
Yeah.
Wasn't one of their more popular games, but I just liked all the, I mean, they had some really great game modes in there.
Yeah.
And some great, vehicles in there. Like they had different, some kind of interesting vehicles. They had like the little carrier ship and the launch pod little van system where you could get like four or five, maybe six guys in there, and you'd go attack the enemy Titan ship and you could all launch up there. It was always pretty cool.
Nice.
I'm definitely looking forward to it, see what they can do with it.
Yeah, so we'll see. Apparently, you know, again, these are just, you know, what I just said is obviously confirmed regarding campaign, multiplayer, and having 64-player, maps.
Right.
The story is supposed to cover the entire Star Wars saga and, of course, give you control of both the Empire and the Alliance.
Now, entire, do you mean...
Now, let's see. So, apparently, the majority is going to be in the original trilogy.
4, 5, and 6.
Right.
Okay.
And it's going to feature specific events from the prequel trilogy. So, I think that makes sense because, obviously, everybody loves the original trilogy. We will not speak of the prequel.
As long as we get to kill Jar Jar.
Yes. So, how crazy would that be if they had him as like a joke hero unit or something?
He just falls down. That's all he does.
Yeah, just something like that. That'd be a cool Easter egg. So, DICE, if you're listening, put him in as a joke, you know, so we can snipe him.
I definitely like it. I'd be the one asshole to pick him.
just use him.
Just like, to troll people.
Right. My main concern regarding this is, will there be third person viewpoint? I think this is a huge thing that people have brought up, and the game really at its core, it needs to be played in third person. You need to kind of have the lay of the land, right? I think the game will still be great if it's just first person, but it will be missing so much if they don't have the third person option.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but in Battlefront 2, couldn't you switch back and forth
between? Exactly, you could switch between.
That's what I thought.
Right, and I think they need to do that with Battlefront 3, but given that DICE isn't that's not their forte, that's not
right
focus, they may opt out of it, you know, to basically not risk doing a horrendous job in, you know, with a third person and just sticking to their guns, you know, figuratively speaking, and doing what they know,
right,
which is first person. So we'll see about that.
I'm looking forward to it though.
Yeah, for sure.
It's been far too long.
yeah, everybody's hyped for this game. It's apparently, you know, it's supposed to release holiday 2015.
Okay.
You know, kind of coinciding with The Force Awakens release. So we will see. I'm cautiously optimistic about Star Wars 7.
That's a safe way to be. I am the same, and I was remembering, I read something, it was a few months ago. It's on Gizmodo or Kotaku or something. And
yeah.
The guy was saying, just remember that everyone was super excited for episode one before it came out.
Yep.
And the hype was at an all-time high for that movie.
That's true.
And so he's like, just
keep that in mind.
Keep in mind. Just don't lose your shit because it may be terrible.
Yeah.
But, you know, J.J. Abrams is, with the exception of Lost, I've pretty much liked what he's done.
Yeah. I think it's definitely good that someone other than George Lucas is in charge of the seventh movie.
Definitely.
So I think that definitely shows promise.
And, you know, it's kind of interesting, though. The guy who did Star Trek is doing Star Wars. They're both J.J. Abrams.
Yeah, man. Star Trek was both.
Yeah, they're both.
Both recent movies. Those are fantastic.
A little too much flair, but otherwise, I enjoyed them.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the casting on both of those was pretty great, too.
Apparently, there's a Banjo-Kazooie spiritual successor in the works.
Okay.
This is very exciting. I'm a huge fan of Banjo-Kazooie 1 and 2, you know, Banjo-Tooie.
I played a little bit back when I was in, I guess, middle school, elementary school.
Yeah.
But I never really got into it. I never had it.
Yeah. Those games are fantastic. I mean, you know, there's so much to complete. The multiplayer in Banjo-Tooie was fantastic.
I remember that.
Yeah,
though.
So you could, like, it's like everybody had their own Kazooie.
Right.
You know, and you could just, like, it had different types of eggs. Man, I need to play the multiplayer on Banjo-Tooie. I'm pretty sure they have, like, net play using Project 64.
I know one that, I really wish they'd re-release, Conker's Bad Fur Day.
God, I love that game.
I know. I mean, that multiplayer was so much fun. And the single player was so dirty and so great. But the multiplayer was a lot of fun, being that was it Teddy Bears versus the squirrels?
Yep.
I think.
Yep.
And, oh, man, it was violent, but it was
such
awesome.
A great game. I remember those. Remember, you know, like this couch co-op playing the four players, you know, like me, you, Joseph, Tim, everybody else, like
screaming at each
so
other.
So many all the time. It's like, man, it's like, fuck you, throw this grenade in my corner, like, you know, like keep somebody up against the wall or whatever. And just like they'd have no escape, no ammo.
Right. And I remember the great thing about that is you had, I'm sure this wasn't the first time this was in anything, but one of the maps I remember distinctly, there was like gas canisters, and once you collected so many of them,
that's right,
there was only a safe zone in the middle of the map, and you could make it in there, and you'd be safe for the few seconds. Then everyone else was gassed.
Yeah, man.
And they had like dynamic type events that happened in there.
That game was really good.
It was, and they did not a re-release, but I guess a reimagining on the original Xbox.
You know, I honestly did not play that. I need to go back and play it.
It wasn't that good from what I remember.
Yeah, I've heard mixed things, but I'm definitely, like, I want to try it.
I think it was Conquer Reloaded or like that.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think I had it at one point, but it wasn't, I mean, I was really just hoping for a re-release, but I don't know, maybe someday.
Yeah, we'll see.
Next on the list, we've got State of Decay. This is one that I just threw on there because they're apparently re-releasing it for the Xbox One. It's an Xbox 360 game, which I haven't played, but I've watched some videos on. And it's kind of, I'm not going to say another zombie survival game. It's more mechanic-based and more RPG-based, where you have to survive and there are zombies out there. But it's more about leveling your character, actually surviving. Kind of like, I'm not going to say Left 4 Dead exactly, because Last of Us. There we go.
Yeah.
Last of Us wasn't necessarily all about the zombies. It was more about the story and the characters.
Yeah, very like strong narrative.
Right.
Really driving the gameplay there.
Right. And you had kind of the infected or the clickers, or, I mean, they were zombies.
Right.
Kind of having a supporting role, but they weren't the main focus.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, kind of the same in State of Decay from what I've seen, is that, I mean, there are zombies and they're a game mechanic, but more importantly, it's about having your character leveling them up, leveling up your base, recruiting people. And the other really cool thing about it is when your character dies, they're dead.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you switch to another character at your base.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So your character's dead for good. It's kind of got that roguish element to it.
Right.
They don't respawn.
Yep.
And I definitely think that's cool. Like, I won't play, if I'm playing Diablo, you can play a hardcore character. When they die, they die.
Mm-hmm.
Man, you can put 20, 30 hours into a character, getting them to level 60 or 70, the max level, mm-hmm. and then put a ton more getting them geared. And if they just die, they're gone.
Man, I can't do that.
I couldn't. No, I would literally.
I cannot risk that.
I'm not a rage quitter, but I would rage quit the game after that.
Without question. I mean, it's like losing your your save file in a game, in an RPG especially. That totally kills my momentum and willingness to play the game.
Same here.
I remember, God, on Phantasy Star Episode 1 for GameCube. Fantastic. It was great that they added split-screen multiplayer. Had friends we came over and we'd like level up our characters together, play mm-hmm. for I don't know how many hours. But my save file, like my own individual save file, got corrupted. Ooh. Man, I was far, my mag was a really high level, super powerful. And I just couldn't go back after that. It was just, I was so far in the game.
I mean, I hear you. I mean, yeah. I just think of the games that I've played a lot. Like that happened with the first Batman Arkham Asylum.
Yeah.
I think I was 20, 30 something hours into it. And I thought I'd backed up my game saves, or I thought it was a Steam cloud save. It's back when Steam cloud saves were first coming out.
Right.
And I reinstalled my computer and I had my other game saves, and I looked back at it and I didn't have that one.
Jeez, man.
I was like, oh no.
That just deflates you, man. It's like, I feel like at that point, when it comes to that for a game that you put so much time on, because you did everything so specifically.
Right.
And it's like, you can't, it's never going to be that original exact way that you did it.
Right.
Especially when it comes to an RPG. So I don't know. Whenever that happens to me with an RPG, I just have to not play the game for a while. I'm just deflated, and then like maybe years later, I'll come back and play it.
I've got a funny story. My current wife, when we were first started dating, I got her into World of Warcraft.
Uh huh.
And I've been playing for years, but I got her into it. And we hit the first expansion, Outlands, and she was in the levels. I mean, this is when the max level was, I guess, when Lich King. So it was max level 70, and right. She was early 60s. And I created.
That's pretty good.
I know, yeah. I mean, she'd gotten up there. She definitely put some hours into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I created a bogus Death Knight character that we were just fooling around with. And I made it some dirty name or something. And we had both been drinking, and she decided she wanted to delete that Death Knight character because, like, the level, it starts out like level 50, 55, something
yeah.
like that. And she goes in there and she clicks on the button, and she's a really fast typer, and then typed delete, but she clicked on her main character.
No, that's the worst.
And she was like, no. Oh, and I was, God. I mean, I was drunk and laughing and drooling. And I'm not even making that up. She still says, I can't believe you drooled on me.
Oh my God.
But no,
this is one for the books, guys.
It was like, it wasn't
this is crazy.
As funny at the time, but thinking back on it, it was pretty damn funny. Man. But no, she, and I told her to, she got a hold of, one of the GMs or one of the, game mods.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they got her character back.
That's great.
And awesome. It was amazing because she was like, all right, look, we're drunk right now. And I accidentally deleted the wrong character. Can you please help? Like, yeah, we got you.
That's awesome, man.
And
no, respect, Blizzard.
But she would have quit right then.
Of course. I mean, she would not all have the gone, time.
Would not have done that again.
It's too much. It's too much because you're so, it's like meticulous. It's like you're, like your baby, kind of.
Yeah. I mean, and then, you've got friends like Tim who have 10 level 80s.
Dude,
90s.
I don't even know about that. I mean, you, like, yes, you told me, but it was like, it's not like people traded to him, right? It's just like his own characters?
Yeah, yeah. He just likes playing.
I don't know, man. That's a lot.
I mean, I like leveling characters, but I can't do it that. I can't do it.
I don't know, man. It's too much.
Yeah. But back up your game saves, guys. Don't delete them. Well, actually, now almost everything's cloud saves.
Yeah.
Xbox and PSN.
Exactly. The cloud backup is a nice.
I mean, you have to have like the games. Yeah, like the Xbox Live and PlayStation Network.
That's true.
You could still have a hard drive failure and lose stuff, so.
That's true. Yeah. I gotta
back your shit up.
Exactly.
We shall soon see. Behold!
So, that sound, as you well know, guys, means it's time for Goldar's Goldmine. So, we talk about a couple of deals, hit on a couple of them. And first thing is that the you know, Steam announced their mystery midweek sale, you know, offering over 40 games. This includes the Max Payne trilogy, ooh, one of the best. I absolutely love these games. I need to play 3, actually. I had a blast with the first two. I think Max Payne series is a great example of cinematic brilliance. I really love the first one. It was just a really dynamic story. I love the comic book style.
And that bullet time.
Yes. And so, you know, it wasn't like bullet time was just this gimmick and the, you know, that's all the action revolved around. It was a great game, a great story. It's a great deal. It's under $10 for the trilogy. So if you haven't played them, buy it right now.
That's not bad at all. I'll definitely like to go back. And I remember playing the first one because we were in middle school or something. Probably shouldn't have been playing those. I remember at the time.
What was it, like 2001 or something?
I don't know. It was way back.
It was really early.
But I do remember one level where you're like tripping on drugs.
Yep.
And you have to walk down like this tightrope or something and everything's black around
that
you.
That scared the absolute shit out of me.
Me too. I remember, oh my God, what is this?
Like the sequence.
Yeah.
Yeah, that definitely.
That took me a long time to get through that.
Yeah. Nightmares were had.
But that was some good stuff.
Yeah. So there's definitely a lot of games here available. There's The Wolf Among Us is half off. Also, Alan Wake is half off. You have the DLC available as well. You know, Valve's pulling a fast one and reaching into our wallets.
Oh, man. Summer sale every year.
I'm still waiting for that. I've not yet experienced the bliss of
the summer sale.
Yeah.
Here's what you do. Take your credit card right now.
Yes.
Go freeze it in the freezer, cut it up, because that summer sale is going to come. I easily spend $150.
Yep, easy.
And it's just like, oh man, but it's so cheap.
Right. I don't know. Based Gaben.
All hail the Gaben. Okay. And then IGN, they've got actually a list of games with gold that you can get free on Xbox Live Gold. We've got Geometry Wars 3 Dimensions.
Excellent game.
Now, is this, let's see, is this free?
No.
Okay, no, that's just a discount on it. Okay, yeah, okay. Yeah. And then they've got some NBA 2K15, 33% off. Different content packs, 50% off. Okay. So they got some sports stuff going on. I'm not a huge sports fan. My brother's really into all the sports games. I've got a bunch of friends that are.
The only one that I play is FIFA. Okay. Because, like, my friends are like, you know, soccer's my favorite sport, and so we just love FIFA.
You mean football?
Correct.
Football.
Yeah. So hopefully the super diehard fans won't kill me over that one. But, you know, big soccer fan. And the games are great. FIFA is always, you know, better every year. Those are just about the only ones I play. And my friends are, like, super competitive with it. The last one I bought was FIFA 12.
Okay.
But my friends always have a copy, and they'll bring over, you know, their 360 copy or Xbox One copy. And I'll play, and it's the same as the other one, so I'll still whoop them, even though I don't have the game. It's not a huge difference, right?
Last FIFA game I played was FIFA 2K, FIFA 2000. It was
way back.
Let's see, what else?
Well, we have now, we mentioned the Star Wars Humble Bundle last week, guys.
Right.
And now they've announced the new games. They have three additional titles. There's Dark Forces 2.
Mm-hmm.
And Jedi Knight 2, Jedi Outcast, as I predicted, to complete that four-part series. And Star Wars Starfighter.
Okay.
Yeah. It would be super nice if Jedi Starfighter was available for PC. Unfortunately, it isn't. It's Xbox and PS2 only, original Xbox.
Okay.
That game was pretty interesting. You know, like the kind of integration between you know, like the flight gameplay and force powers at the same time was pretty interesting.
Now, is that one on, which, did that center around the episode 1, 2, and 3, or?
God, it's been so long since I've played it.
Okay, yeah. I want to say I may have played that one, but I can't really tell you.
Yeah, I believe it was around the pre-sequel, because, like, on the box art, they had the, like, the Jedi Starfighter that was used in episodes 2 and 3,
mm-hmm,
right, by Obi-Wan and Anakin.
Mm-hmm, right.
So, definitely around that time. But yeah, those games are great. Also, especially with the, you know, Jedi Knight 2, Jedi Outcast. That one, that and Jedi Academy are definitely my favorites. I'm really excited to tried Dark Forces 1 and 2 for the first time. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited about that.
And I think that wraps up the show for the week.
That's right, guys. And so this is the Black Power Gamer and...
This is the Red Power Gamer.
Signing off. Have a good weekend, guys.
Take it easy.